Hello and welcome to Jumping Nothing, a podcast that leaps off the top rope in a diving headbutt and then has to retire. Oh. My name is Carl. I'm here with Michael.
That's very upsetting, Carl.
And I'm also here with Carl.
Hey, Carl.
Lads, there's a lot of myths rolled into wrestling, right? So often, like, David and Goliath will get talked about and all these different things, but there's something about the Prometheus myth that fits all of this so much better this week. Prometheus was a titan who stole fire from the gods and gave it to man, only to spend the rest of his life lashed to a rock, having his liver pecked out by an eagle. Indefinitely, for eternity, because he's immortal. Dynamite Kid changed wrestling. It ruined him. He can't do anything. He just shakes sticks at stuff. He's really unpleasant. Everybody hates him now. CM Punk gave us a new narrative. He had to retire. He's being sued. Daniel Bryan showed us that caring about good wrestling can actually make a difference, but he ruined his body doing it. Every wrestler who changes something, every wrestler who, in the post-Vince McMahon era, when Vince McMahon is God, everyone who tries to show us that what we want can actually happen, ends up retired or paralyzed. What's going on?
Wow, that's so depressing.
That's so depressing.
And there's other people that spring to mind, like Austin, crippled.
Eddie Guerrero, dead. Chris Benoit, even, who was like a kind of a smarks wrestler.
Yeah.
He ended up killing everyone.
Even Bret Hart, who, like we've mentioned before, flatback bump machine.
Yeah, you see him now and he's just hobbling around.
Yeah, he's two artificial knees and a stroke survivor.
Yeah, it's...
Kurt Angle, like, driven to the extremes. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Don't be a wrestler, lads.
Or certainly don't be the wrong kind of wrestler. Although maybe this is sample size, is it? Maybe I'm just choosing the ones who are fucked, who also we like. Mm. Whereas the ones that we don't like, they're also fucked and dead.
Yeah, Edge. Don't really care about him. Personally.
Is he fucked?
Yeah, he had to retire with a neck thing.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Leave Edge alone.
I'm not dissing Edge, but I just thought there was...
You're dissing Edge a little bit, mate. I'm getting a bit angry now.
There were more people there who I care more about than Edge.
God, that's a grim sentiment. You know, yeah. There's so many people with awful, horrendous, life-altering neck injuries that you rank them based on how many five-star matches they've had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're only there to entertain us.
Yeah. Don't be a wrestling fan. Don't be a wrestler. Or don't like wrestling.
This is the overall message of Jumping Nothing. And I think the first episode of our first run was called Wrestling is Shit for Children.
Yeah.
So we're still here. What's going on in the world of wrestling?
TNA Impact, that thing that we all hate and never watch, got cancelled for an episode.
What? They got cancelled? Oh, just for an episode.
They skipped an episode to run a Slammiversary rerun instead.
Yeah.
Which is thought to be a very inauspicious sign from Destination America, their current cable provider.
Destination America have apparently stepped in and just said, look, guys, this is really, really poor. We need to up the game a little bit. So I don't know what's going to happen with that.
The last thing I'd heard about Destination America was they were like, we want Kurt Angle all over everything because he's like really American and we have America in our name. And that's the only reason they bought TNA?
Yeah.
Is that... anybody else hear that? Or do I dream it?
Probable.
Yeah.
I mean, well, he's also got the name recognition. But yeah, he's an all-American guy and he's extremely addicted to prescription drugs. So that's pretty much America.
And what's the Billy Corgan angle?
They hired Billy Corgan to do creative. After Billy Corgan's great success with the company that he created a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I thought the news was that he was like creating a... his own wrestling company, or was that years ago?
I think that's
years ago.
That's already failed, I think.
Okay, that was like in the 80s. Okay. Fuck TNA.
TNA is like disproportionately popular in England, though.
It's got a strong presence of English guys.
Let me correct you there, Carl. It's not as disproportionately popular in the UK. It's that there's a disproportionate number of people like us trying to monetize a non-existent TNA fandom in the UK, and I don't know how they keep going, but it gives a false impression that anybody gives a fuck.
It's come up occasionally already, but there are things that TNA do that I really, really like, but I just don't want to actually go out of my way to watch them. you know? Also, they're very general things from the, like, 6 episodes of TNA I've watched over the course of 8 years. I'm like, that's good. It might not be still happening, but...
Yeah.
What is it? Why is the death pall, the, like, Faulknerite death pall over TNA, regardless of effort and direction, it just all seems a bit pointless.
There's overall dreadful things. It's like having a car and going, oh, that's a really nice car. I like the spoiler, but it's got no engine in it. Like, it's... dreadful mistakes they make that are just financially ruinous as well. Like having a roster of like 40 wrestlers and paying them all relatively well, but having 4 stables of 8 guys each. So actually they all just wrestle kind of as a group and they don't really wrestle.
I think it's the sort of heartbreaking element of it. Like there's been so many moments where like TNA has signed this guy we like. Or, oh, there seems to be an interesting sort of story thing developing in TNA. And then all of a sudden, Hulk Hogan is involved out of nowhere. Or AJ Styles turns heel because Kevin Nash wants to be the babyface or something. There's just loads of, like, there was so much promise at so many moments in TNA's history. And they consistently fucked it up. And they don't have like WWE is starting to resemble a lot of TNA in how they've just like shat on their own doorstep with a lot of people over the years, but they still have one show a year where it's enormous and very like pretty and there's loads of fireworks and looks expensive and impressive. TNA had that, they'd be alright.
Okay,
they'd be able to justify the fact that they've broken our hearts so often.
I want to clarify, do we want TNA to die?
It might be a necessary sacrifice to allow a spot for someone else to come in. But the moment they occupy a kind of cancerous position as they're the second promotion, are they still?
I guess. Like,
do we call them that? Or Ring of Honor? But then Ring of Honor kind of sucks too.
Is it too serious? It's weird because Ring of Honor is genre wrestling. Mm. And so is Lucha Underground and so is various other alternatives. But TNA is... mainstream wrestling, but worse. Worse isn't the right term. Just, it's that style of wrestling. Just terrible.
Yeah,
it's shoddy.
Yeah, and I think the other crime that TNA has committed is that there was a brief moment, again, this ties in quite nicely to the tragedy we're talking about today, but there was a brief moment where they had all the stars of the indies. They had Joe, they had AJ, they had Christopher Daniels. They kind of bought up that sort of early mid-2000s indie generation and they put them in TNA and they all wrestled Kevin Nash and Jeff Jarrett and it was shite.
Well, that's the NXT are buying those guys now, right? NXT is hoovering up all of those guys who were what was exciting about TNA, so now TNA doesn't have a great... I mean, Steen you could have seen in TNA having a run at some point.
Yeah, wrestling Kevin Nash. Yeah,
wrestling Kevin Nash. Yeah, absolutely.
Kevin Nash.
He could have rerun the Ring of Honor feud, the Cornette feud.
Yeah.
And it would have been great.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Samoa Joe, you mentioned there, he's gone up.
Yeah, so NXT gets another person, another veteran indie star who's had the crap eaten out of him for 15 years. So that'll probably go well.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that like Samoa Joe stopped caring about 5-6 years ago.
I think that's probably partly to do with TNA.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember him, I used to, because I follow him on Twitter, and occasionally he'd start streaming like video games on Twitch, but he'd be doing it while like TNA is on, and people would be like, what's, you're not watching TNA? He's like, oh, what, is it on a Wednesday night now? Or what? Like that kind of thing. And then he'd be just there playing Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. to 30 people on Twitch instead of doing anything to do with wrestling.
Well, so does he project? To me, it strikes me, he's in his mid-30s now, isn't he?
Like, yeah.
He's reasonably old. He strikes me as a run guy, like what they thought Rusev would end up being and what he kind of still is, where you build him as this big, scary Samoan or whatever, and he comes in and he feeds Cena or whoever he feeds, and then he kind of drops the mid-card and drops out in 2 years. Is that the way it's going to go?
Probably. Like, I can't personally buy Joe. I've had this conversation with both of you before. Don't really like Samoa Joe. I wasn't there for when he was good. I just kind of go back and see matches of Punk and go, yeah, that's pretty good. It's not brilliant. But I can't see where his place in WWE, let alone NXT, is. Other than some guy that goes into NXT, beats up Bull Dempsey, and then, you know, maybe gets the main roster at some point.
You know what the nightmare scenario is, though? Like, they're building a Samoan faction for Roman Reigns or whoever. Oh, and he's just going to be the fat Samoan.
Yeah.
There'll be some other Samoans.
He's not going to be Samoa Joe. He's going to be someone else. So this is like, he's been enduringly Samoa Joe. So that's one of the great things about his character, even though I don't like him that much, is that he's been the same for 15 years, basically.
Yeah.
And now he's not going
to
be.
He's going to be Carter.
Yeah, Jason Matthews, like, you know.
Tonga Kid too.
Yeah, are they going to give him a ghetto name, like, in line with his Thug Life image in his final gimmicky grouping in TNA with, what would they call it, the Beatdown Clan? Like, what kind of gimmick is he going to get? Is he going to have no gimmick? Are they going to just do a Kevin Steen and make him the exact same but change his surname?
Hopefully. I don't know.
Surname is Joe.
Samoa Matthews. But anyway, he's taking the place, we're going to say, of Sami Zayn in the NXT roster, who went up in an unbelievable debut, actually.
It was great for the first 30 seconds. His entrance, the setting, introduced by Brett.
Yeah, so Cena's in the ring
issuing his open challenge because he's a fighting US champion, and then Brett's music hits, and it's like, whoa, because they're in Montreal or somewhere. And then Brett does a kind of little bit of a speech.
And then he says, like, here's a great young wrestler.
Yeah. And then Sami Zayn's music hits, and everyone goes absolutely nuts. I was sitting just watching this and was like, whoa, I'm not a 26-year-old adult anymore. I just think this is the coolest thing ever. Well, then it all comes crashing down.
There was, in between, Heath Slater came out. And everybody was like, oh, disappointment. But then WWE used our disappointment to then sky us back up with Sami Zayn. But then he fucked his shoulder. He tore his shoulder in the middle of the match, and he kept going.
He does another, like, they have a 10 or 12 minute match. Yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was exciting, but it just means that an unbelievable amount of rub that he got there in his debut is gone. They have to just bring him back in another way.
Damn.
Are we excited about him and a run?
Yeah, well, I mean,
If he's healthy, yeah. Not able for this, though. These guys getting injured and going away.
Yeah,
I don't want to get invested. That's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we all like the small guys. The guys that aren't naturally, like, huge. These Rusev and Cena characters.
Yeah.
But, you know, they seem to be pretty sturdy. Maybe I'm going to get behind Rusev. Yeah. Well, we're all kind of behind Rusev anyway, but I'll just get behind him. He seems solid. He's not going to get injured anytime soon.
Although he wrestles without shoes.
Yeah,
which can't be good for his, I don't know, ligaments or something.
His arches.
Presumably there's a technical reason behind wearing shoes. Like, people,
I think it's just because it gets slippery.
Yeah.
He's taped up, though. I think that's arch support. And
okay. So he's alright.
Ankles, yeah.
If anybody out there is a a podiatrist? Podiatrist, chiropodist. If you're a foot doctor, get in touch with us. jumpingnothing@gmail.com. Let us know how Rusev's arches are looking.
Yeah.
So also New Japan and Ring of Honor crossover show. It's kind of in motion still as we record this. Very exciting to see Japanese people tweeting from Philadelphia about local fast food.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. The show was last year was great. It was Kevin Steen versus Shinsuke.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Kevin Steen did a dive.
Oh, sorry? Really? Shinsuke against Roderick Strong this time.
Oh, that's not so good.
Not as good, no.
No.
But we'll.
Okada's famous point promo.
I remember that. Oh, yeah, we did. Did we do a show?
We did, yeah. I think it was Elgin Styles, was it?
They had the triple threat match.
And then Okada came in and he was like, hold on 1 second, and then points at one guy. Does a belt motion, then points at the other guy, does a belt motion, and Michael Elgin, the fighting champion, accepts the challenge.
I also like how he was clearly, well, I've seen a bit of American wrestling, they're always doing the belt motion. So that'll get me through this. The other thing is that you remember at the last Rev Pro show, straight up actual Japanese people in the audience.
Yeah.
I would love to see those groupies going to like these Ring of Honor shows. Like the fans of that go, the super fans of New Japan.
Yeah.
Because they were women, weren't they?
Yeah.
There were two Japanese women
yeah.
in this ocean of fat, sort of, I like to say I'm an ECW fan, even though I was born in 1995. Those people, I would like to see them right in their midst. They're a special experience, the ROH crowd.
Yeah, they would need like their own security guard to
yeah, they might cry.
Yeah, and then also, after this will come out after Payback was on.
Do we care about Payback?
No.
It's like the B pay-per-viewist of any B pay-per-view.
It's only 3 weeks after a B pay-per-view. And it's also the C pay-per-view.
They're also going to do Elimination Chamber.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as like a network-only thing.
Oh, like they did with King of the Ring.
Yeah, but it'll be on a Sunday night, I think.
Okay.
And I don't know if they're going to have an undercard or if it's just going to be an Elimination Chamber. But that's a weird kind of development. The fact that they're bringing back all these kind of brands that they have in the cooler to try and get people to watch the network.
Yeah.
Does it smack of desperation?
It does a bit. Although I don't really get it. So their financial reports out a couple of weeks ago for last year highlighted the importance of pay-per-view buys outside of network territory. So in places like China and stuff, they're making like a lot of money.
Okay.
Mostly out of the big flagship pay-per-views. But Elimination Chamber, that kind of has a bit of a brand to it. It's not like a big four, but it is an exciting thing, kind of.
Yeah.
Get why they wouldn't, you know.
Well, I'm sure they can pay-per-view it in China.
Yeah.
If they want, just won't be in the US. Because they got dumped by a lot of their pay-per-view carriers after they started to undermine them at every moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to talk about Daniel Bryan today because he has retired. And that's sad because we all like Daniel Bryan.
Mm.
We're going to go back through his career as the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson.
Mm-hmm.
Through his missteps at the start of his WWE career, to the top of the mountain, and then back down to the bottom again. Stay tuned.
Daniel Bryan, we're sorry. And it's our fault.
Is it our fault?
It's our fault.
So Daniel Bryan has essentially retired
mm-hmm.
because his head and neck are broken.
Yeah, and that's our fault.
We, using the induction of sort of fan demand, we caused that. We caused him to do those diving headbutts, to wrestle strong style. We killed him. He's not even 40 and he's done.
He's not even close to 40.
What is he?
He's like 34 or something like that.
So he must have, like, he was at the top of the indies when he was still young.
Yeah.
Do you know a lot about his indie run?
Yeah, I know kind of, like, always dipped in and out, but he was the holdout in the sort of mid-2000s. Joe and AJ go to TNA. The guy that owns Ring of Honor gets arrested for pedophilia. Bryan Danielson hangs around and he becomes the guy that's sort of carrying the we're an American wrestling organization that knows what Pro Wrestling Noah is, and he works that style, and he's it's a kind of a style that's sort of faded. Like even Shinsuke Nakamura, who's supposed to be the strong style sort of torchbearer now that Pro Wrestling Noah has been shut down by the Yakuza that own it.
Yeah.
Now,
allegedly.
Yeah. It's not quite the same as what it was back then, which was a lot of really sort of like the structure of those matches would often be sort of a lot of, they'd build it up as a serious sort of old timey wrestling match, a lot of holes, a lot of rolling around, a lot of grappling. And then they'd get to a point where they'd break it down and there'd be a lot of punching a guy in the eye. And Bryan Danielson was a guy that kind of was the best at that style, the innovator of that style in a lot of ways. And it was the sort of the most hipstery wrestling ever got, because you had that sort of, I know what World of Sport is, I'm going to do that kind of wrestling. But I also know how guys in Japan are kicking each other right in the face, and I'm going to kick you right in the face also. So like,
so for Pete,
he was that guy. He was the guy. He was 2000s North American wrestling in a man. Yeah. That's what Daniel Bryan was.
So like, while it's the John Cena era in the indies, Bryan Danielson is that guy. Like, he wrestled as a top guy in Ring of Honor. He was booked as a, you can't beat me, and he was still a face, right?
Yeah, he kind of went back and forth a little bit.
He was a heelish face. Like, even the stuff that people loved, like his gestures, were things like him choking someone out on a rope and saying, I've got till five, like, to break this illegal hold. Like, it was cool stuff.
Yeah, no, he wasn't a milk drinking baby face.
Yeah.
It's something like not quite like Brock Lesnar, but, you know, knew about fighting. It's like, this guy looks like he can fight. Like, not physically, but like the things that he do are designed to hurt people.
Yeah. And
it is like, it's weird. He combines like the good wrestler being a good wrestler. It in a sort of Benoit way, it's like serious fans want to suspend their disbelief into believing that people who can do technically complicated professional wrestling holds are actually good at fighting. And he combined that in a way that not many people have in recent years as an indie wrestler. Like, hold for hold stuff he's really good at, but then the impact stuff he's really good at too. Like, I mean, is there a sense in which he saved that stuff? Because that's still what people say they want to see in WWE now.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't so much that he saved that stuff. It's like you said, in the WWE at the time, you know, years to come, when writers and new generations of wrestlers look back on, you know, oh, you got to watch this stuff from the 2000s, they're not going to be like, Batista and the Spirit Squad. They're not going to be talking about how these guys sort of developed and carried the torch for wrestling at this period. They're going to look at a guy like Bryan Danielson, who took what was done before and developed it and created, not him exclusively, but this is the moment of the 2000s. This is what wrestling was then. And it isn't so much that he saved it. He was just like, he's literally the sort of next step in, like, in every kind of creative endeavor, there's always a sense of development about people want to do something. They want to reclaim stuff from the past. They want to do things that are different. That's stopped in wrestling if all you watch is the WWE. And Bryan Danielson was the guy at the forefront of this next period in wrestling and how people think about wrestling and how people perform professional wrestling.
I like the idea of a savior as well, because there's going to be pre Daniel Bryan WWE and post Daniel Bryan WWE, because pre was Batista and this kind of nonsense, bland crap that no one really liked, but you know, we kind of watched anyway and complained about it. And then you kind of had this savior come along that we had been calling on for ages, so we finally got our messiah, and then we cheered for him, and then he kind of went away, and then he came back. And I was like, whoa, this is really it. And that's like, we dragged him up and he dragged us up.
Yeah.
As WWE fans. And now he's been martyred for this.
Yeah.
And now all we have to look back on is, we called for this messiah.
Yeah, we did. And it's kind of difficult to discern between, because it's obviously a storyline savior. It's, people underestimate the extent to which that WrestleMania win was a work. Like, obviously it was a work, but I mean, people still believe that cheering for Daniel Bryan caused everybody to just go, oh, I'm so frustrated, let's just rip up the script and give them what they want, and it's this victory for us and him at the same time. But realistically, they worked us into that
idea.
So it's not like Daniel Bryan triumphed over the evil of modern wrestling.
It isn't that. Forget about that moment and all that shit. But what Brian did, and I think Punk did as well to an extent, though Punk was always, was never the sort of the wrestler, the sort of stylish wrestler that, that Daniel Bryan was. But think of everything from about 2002 to 2008, 9, 10 in WWE. It was this sort of, like, how would you describe the dominant style? Like, you couldn't. It was just sort of like this, do some of the wrestling that was popular in the late 90s, just dial it back so it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have the triumph of people like JBL, Rey Mysterio, for a good while, Chris Jericho, and a kind of late Shawn Michaels carried it. And it was a pretty desperate time.
Yeah.
We had Batistas.
But is that directly... This is what I'm trying to get at. That's, it's not like Brian triumphed over that. Brian came in after that was already on the way out. And then triumphed by referring to that as if it is what's still completely dominant. And then won. So that's like a storyline victory. Rather than a...
Yeah, no, it's not just a storyline victory. It's a sort of a style. Like, genuinely, he kind of reinvigorated what was going on in that company. Because the... Like you said, it was this shit sort of derivative nothing wrestling style. And then they're forced to... All their guys are retiring. They're forced to use indie guys. You know, they're football players and stuff aren't working out. So that's when you get guys... Punk gets elevated. They kind of have to elevate him. Brian comes in. And... We'll talk about it in a sec, because there's a conventional logic that Brian got over because he did the Yes thing. Brian got over, in my opinion, because his comebacks were so strong. Like, his they were proper, like, mega babyface stuff. And he'd come back, this small guy, and he would strike really hard, and he would do his excellent dives to the outside, which eventually killed him. But they look really impressive. They look really strong. And he reinvigorated what's John Cena's comeback? He gets up and he does his moves, and he's tall and white. Whereas Daniel Bryan's comeback is he grabs a guy and he puts him in a chokehold for a few minutes. Now, he's not doing it the way he did in Ring of Honor, where he's snarling and screaming that he's going to kill the guy, but he's putting them in a very sort of polite way. He's putting them in a chokehold that looks like, oh my god, Daniel Bryan's grabbed him by the neck, he's going to win.
Yeah.
Or he punches him in the head a lot, then he bounces off the other turnbuckle and comes back and he hits him really hard again. And I was like, oh, he's a small guy, he's going really fast, he's hitting them really hard. Like, that's the sort of reinvigoration of the WWE style. That's what you see kind of throughout the rest of the card now, is suddenly the comebacks and the kind of structure of the match are all about doing something in a way that's impressive. It isn't the logic of, well, they'll recognize this move that I'll do that now.
Yeah.
It's about having a slightly more legit sense about how the baby faces kind of explode and get over.
Okay. So let's talk about his conversion into a WWE wrestler in that sense. So he came in about 2000 something, and he choked out Josh Matthews with his tie, which was said by Mattel, I think, to have been too violent. So they fired him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the death of straight up violence Daniel Bryan. Or straight up violence Bryan Danielson. They leave him sitting for 2 months and then they hire him back. But he really did work. It's not like the business accommodated him in a character sense rather than in a in-ring sense. It's he moved to that. He did the stuff with Kane, the Team Hell Yes. Hell No. When they went to couples therapy, and like, it was pure saccharine WWE 3/4 angle bullshit. But it got really over. And then he married AJ. He was in that big storyline where AJ was marrying everybody. And that, like, that's that's the build to
polygamous AJ.
That was the build to the Punk Brian match that I think we may have watched. It was like, oh, do you remember when you were married to AJ? Now I'm storyline married to AJ. But that shit, he got over doing that shit as well, you know?
Can I make a bold statement?
Yeah.
Can I make a wrong statement?
Okay.
He got, none of that shit had anything to do with him getting over. Let's put that out there as a wrong statement. That I know is wrong, but maybe I don't. here's the yes thing got over when people, regular fans as well as nerds, started noticing that he just started screaming the word yes for no particular reason. Not while he wasn't mic'd up or anything, after he'd win a match. And that kind of got him over. People were like, yeah, that's so funny and weird. We want to see more of it. And then the writers got their hands on it and they started doing all this shit. And none of them really enjoyed that. But what people would always enjoy was just Daniel Bryan gets tagged into a match and the other guy's walking around the ring trying to do wrestling at him and he just says the word yes. And he turns to the crowd and he cheers. And he's meant to be a heel, but they just go for it anyway. None of the sort of noise they put around him mattered. He was a thoroughly likable, funny, excellent wrestler. And people, that shit would have turned, if they put that on anybody else, it would have turned them off. It kind of turned me off.
Okay. Well,
how's that for a wrong statement,
Carl? I would suggest that it's not completely wrong. And obviously, things to do with his actual personality and his in-ring style and how driven he is or whatever.
Yeah, because here's the swerve. It's a correct statement. Proceed.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's obviously important. But I think the thing that stops like real smart wrestlers getting to the proper next level in WWE is that you need those kids. 50% of the money, probably more, that comes into WWE is coming from children's parents' credit cards, on merch, on fucking toys, on house show tickets, and that kind of stuff. And the way that Daniel Bryan stopped just being a potential sort of smart guy curio who we all get behind and had actual children wanting to be behind him was by doing those bullshit storylines. That's how he opened up the door and became like the big face of the WWE rather than a great wrestler in WWE who we all like, but who children are just like, oh yeah, that guy's good, but my favourite is still Kofi.
It bought him a few years relatively near the top as well, because these storylines were relatively major.
Yeah.
So he got like considerable time near or close to the top that like people like Kofi don't get because they're boring and don't have good storylines.
Yeah.
And are overrated wrestlers as well. Take that, Kofi.
Given Edge shit earlier as well.
Yeah, no one is safe. Especially not while wrestling, apparently. So he had loads of time to become a recognizable face, to grow his beard, to kind of be annoying and then get over in a positive way and then incorporate this yes thing. So it was just this like this final crowning. So yes is your thing now. He was already there.
Yeah.
I think he was already pretty much over with a lot of people, but he needed something that like you can't see me, like something for the children to put on a t-shirt, and he got it. Like, and it, like when we saw him win giant matches, we were all kind of going yes, 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 yeah, yes, yeah, as well. Like, it was pretty infectious. It was a cool thing. Yeah. Didn't he nicked it off a UFC guy or something, didn't he?
I don't know.
I don't think so, no.
I remember seeing an interview with him. He said that he saw some MMA guy doing it one day on the way to a ring, and he just thought, that's cool, I'm going to do that. And it's similar to, you know, people who actually care about winning at the end of a worked wrestling match. You know, like, that title means something to them, therefore I can buy into this. Daniel Bryan really likes winning, so he's going to shout yes, yes, and he loves kicking, so he's going to shout yes, yes as he kicks you to death. Like, it's a pretty like visceral, cool thing that he's got.
Yeah, but I think as far as needing to get over with kids to get over properly, here's how you get over with the kids. So the company itself goes, hey, small child, look at this guy,
doesn't work,
cheer for him.
Doesn't
and
work.
They go, oh, alright, yeah, I'm a small child, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to cheer for this man, not a problem.
Should Daniel Bryan have just become the world's biggest ever indie darling and stayed at NOAH and PWG and Ring of Honor and run that world? Would he have got stale there? Was it worth him changing slightly and going up?
Where does that get you? Like, if you stay healthy, which he wouldn't have done, then you become, I don't know, Christopher Daniels. And if Cole Cabana asks Christopher Daniels, are you happy? He says yes.
Yeah.
But if you say, would you trade in the last 10 years of your career for two good ones in WWE, remembering that you watched that shit when you were a child, you always aspired to it, don't lie, Christopher Daniels, don't fucking lie to us. Yeah, he would have jacked it in, definitely. Everyone would have.
Well, everyone would, for what Brian got something that Like, Lesnar got it, but as we mentioned, he had concussed himself beyond the point of recognition at his first WrestleMania, but he really got a end of the build that ended with him looking up at the sign and going, I finally fucking did it. Surely everyone would trade credibility for that. Like, I would, certainly.
Yeah, so I've got two answers to that question.
Yeah.
I've got, selfishly, I always say I would rather people not go to WWE, not get rich, stay in the indie world, they'll be able to have good matches that I'll enjoy personally.
Yeah.
That's a very selfish view. If I was in their position, obviously I'd go to WWE where I'd make hundreds of thousands of dollars and be okay for a few years. Yeah. At the same time, even though that's my stated view, we saw Christopher Daniels at Revolution Pro Wrestling a couple months ago.
Yeah.
That match ended with two lads from Ireland who came out to...
There's No Limit.
There's No Limit.
To Unlimited. Hello, guys.
They came out to that. They executed very poorly sort of rehearsed tandem dive onto Christopher Daniels, hitting him in the testicles. After which
he was so pissed off.
After which Christopher Daniels stood up and said, hey, you guys that came out to There's No Limit by that band you mentioned who just hit me in the balls, you're great wrestlers and I respect you. Now everybody, let's go to the merch table. I would not like to be in my 40s doing that. Whatever the equivalent is in whatever industry you work in, that's not good. And that made me sad. I was like, you know what, Christopher Daniels, I'd rather you had gone to WWE and been a friend of Kofi Kingston and done that for a few years and gotten a bit of money rather than being here with us now.
Yeah.
With sore knackers.
I'd suggest that Brian would be where Colt is, except a more better, serious wrestler. He would have had a higher status than almost any indie legacy guy we can think of now who didn't go up.
But then what's your... So how do you change wrestling or influence the way the wrestling's going as an indie legend if you can't, like, in a way that you can do more than being a WWE legend? So I know this annoying commercial way of looking at it, but so he's gone and he's had his whatever 6 years or altogether, and it's been good and he's changed the biggest wrestling product on the planet. Admittedly, it's still annoying and in some ways is worse than when we were just complaining about it earlier in the kind of late noughties.
Yeah.
But in many ways it's better. We do have now other guys. It's the things have opened up to like smaller dudes like Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, say. They're both really good and they're the only reason they're there. Not the only reason, they're both talented. But one of the main reasons they're there is because Daniel Bryan has left this big swinging door open behind him.
But don't you think that the influence that he, as the most prominent practitioner of this new style, is going to create those, or help to mold those indie guys anyway, and then those indie guys go up and they try to do this stuff. And it might take longer and it might not be as stark, but it doesn't mean that he's had no influence just because he hasn't gone and shilled for Vince McMahon.
Well, if he stays in the indies, right, and never goes to WWE, he's probably going to stay doing strong style wrestling until his body tells him not to. Whereas what happened was he was told, look, dial it down slightly. He's still doing like loads of strikes and stuff, but he's not like beating the crap out of people. So like,
what does that get him? He's done anyway.
Yeah, he's done anyway, but if then the legacy of him staying in the indies is that you've got loads of guys doing strong style wrestling because it's popular, because they like Daniel Bryan doing it, then you just get loads of lads kicking the shit out of each other. And this is where, like, I don't like seeing lads get dropped on their necks. I don't like people getting kicked in the face really hard just because that's what people want, and then people go, holy shit, holy shit. Like, that's fun for about 10 seconds. And I don't want, like, it's probably getting a bit serious, but I don't want to see guys that we really like get fucked up. Like, it's not about that. But then we're losing the very meaning of professional wrestling as what Roland Barthes wrote about and what we all like grew up watching and loving.
Violent pantomime.
Yeah, it's fucking vicious ballet, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's like, and it's these things that represent like these great sociological changes and pop cultural swings and all these things demonstrated in a wrestling ring via the medium of fake fighting. Yeah. Like, that's why we like professional wrestling. We don't like it because of some lad getting... It's the same reason as we didn't like... We kind of like it at the time, but we don't really like people just getting put through tables or whacked in the head with a steel chair. Like that, you shout holy shit for 5 seconds and then you just go, oh, fuck it, it doesn't matter. It's not a thing. It's not going to have a big impact on my life. No one goes, I remember that great steel chair shot. They say, oh, I remember when Stone Cold Steve Austin encapsulated like a generation of people who wanted to punch their boss in the face. Like, that's important about wrestling.
Yeah. Can I make a suggestion, you know, just on the breakdown of Daniel Bryan's body and us needing to apologize to him?
Yeah.
I think it's more... He probably did more damage to himself in WWE working the 300-day schedule than he did in the indies, where, yeah, okay, his rep leg getting detached versus Takeshi Morishima aside, moments like that. But if you're working every weekend and you're doing lots of heavy punching and kicking, that's probably easier to take than doing a dive every single night of the week for WWE for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
I think. I don't know though. Yeah. I'm not a doctor.
You see him up until recently, even after he came back from injury last time, like running towards the outside to dive on someone. And there's no slowdown of his running after a good few years of doing constant dives 300 nights a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's astonishing to me. Like, it's just a really... Like, it's a cool thing. It's a testament to him, this really ballsy bastard. And same with a few of these other guys. Like, you see Ambrose doing it, just leaping out of the ring in probably the most dangerous way to leap out of the ring. You shouldn't do it face first.
You should do the late 90s, mid-2000s boring planche leap out where you dive over the top and you sort of float down in a cross-body motion.
The very safe Bret Hart version.
Yeah, that's the best
flat
version.
Back bump of the dive. Yeah.
So we should clarify that Daniel Bryan didn't invent American Indie Strong Style Wrestling. He's just a practitioner of it, and it would have come about anyway. And also, I mean, but there is an influence of that style in what he does in WWE. It's not that WWE forced him to do this stuff 300 days a year and that killed him. It's that he signed up to do what he does in a certain, in some sense, 300 days a year. Like, John Cena has had almost no time out for injury in the past 12 years.
No, he has. What are you talking about?
But not in the past 4. And he's now older.
But he's relative to the amount of time he's been in WWE, you would expect him to have been out longer. Like, if his direct comparison in that is like Randy Orton, who's had...
Yeah, and he's got those steroid injuries as well, like the pec. He like detached his pec at some point. That's straight up steroid.
That's a joke injury.
It's a gag. And like, even guys like Triple H with quads detaching, that's all just steroid abuse.
Yeah.
You don't see like sprint runners, oh, my leg fell off, my leg muscles. I'm such an athlete that they fucking detached from the bone.
So I want to talk about Daniel Bryan as an artist. Because I read an interview with him where he was... this was, I think, SummerSlam against Cena or whatever, which is quite a good match. Matches with Cena are always good. Never forget that. They are great. But he says, oh, I'm not in competition with anybody. I don't want to make loads of money, and I don't want to be the best in the company. That's not what motivates me. What motivates me is going out and having like the best wrestling match I can have on this occasion and every this occasion. So where Punk was very concerned with getting the recognition, being on the novelty cups and the ice cream bars and that kind of stuff, Brian just wanted to have great matches on an individual, like on the biggest stage, but like the match qua the match was what was important to him, he claims.
Yeah.
Did he pull that off? Is he like the great artist of our time?
Yeah. While he was in the indies, he was the best wrestler in the world for most of his time in the indies, straight up. While WWE was saying that Triple H was the best wrestler in the world, Daniel Bryan was the best wrestler in the world, easily. I don't think of any of the guys ever in Japan at the time. Japan was in a weird place. I personally didn't like pro wrestling, no. So guys like Misawa never did it for me. Kenta Kobashi never did it for me. So I think Daniel Bryan, straight up, best wrestler in the world for a long period of time. While he was in the WWE, he was the best wrestler in the WWE. But the WWE didn't allow him to produce the best match, sort of globally. They didn't allow him to do what he would like to have done, I'd say. Like, he didn't... There were a lot of those matches where you could clearly see, this isn't what I know to be Daniel Bryan's instance.
Yeah.
At this point in this match.
But do you think he's happy to have done that in a WWE context? Happy to have done matches that are good from his perspective, but that fit within this new paradigm, like a major label record deal, where you can't just show shit?
I get the sense that probably not. Like, I'd say he's probably proud of certain moments in his career, but he's one of these guys, like, I think I might have read the same interview, and in that interview, or in whatever interview it was, he was saying, like, they're like, who did you want to be when you were watching wrestling? And it's like, well, when I was watching WWE and WCW, I really wanted to be Dean Malenko. And that's fine for when you're kind of starting out and theoretically wanting to be a wrestler. But when you're a guy that, I am a wrestler, this is my living.
Yeah.
You don't go, I'm going to pattern my career after the career of Dean Malenko. Like, you don't do that rationally. So
I think he more thought of that, though, in terms of style and...
But I think it's like he this was only a couple of years ago. Like, he's still talking about, oh, I really wanted to be Dean Malenko. Dean Malenko was so good. And Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero used to, because nobody in WCW was paying attention to the cruiserweight matches. So they were just allowed to go out and have a fucking completely anachronistic match as far as WCW's main sort of like what they were always about, how that went.
Yeah.
So that seems to be his like ambition. He just wanted to be on the card somewhere wrestling what he wanted to wrestle. But they never let him, really. And I think the other thing, when people are saying, like, what's the highlight of your career? And you think, oh, winning at WrestleMania. And he would answer, like, getting my retina detached by Takeshi Morishima because I finished the match. And I think that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
I still look at his, like, the highlights of his WWE body of work. So one of the matches I watched before this was his one with CM Punk at Over the Limit. A couple of his with John Cena, that WrestleMania match, which is the bottom of this group that I'm talking about. And at the exact same time, I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, I was reading an essay by Seamus Heaney on T.S. Eliot, where he describes him, I'm not going to quote him, but to paraphrase him, as this like master of inner tonality, but not... Like, yeah, okay, I deserve this. So, but not in a like intentional way. He just understands. He's got like an auditory understanding that other people just don't have. And so when you watch these, especially the match with CM Punk,
you have to explain that in more general terms here.
Okay, so he just has a basic understanding of like the intricacies of wrestling, often more naturally.
So Elliot's ear
is just better, and he just writes the sentence and says the sentence, and he's not even sure why, but it just works better than other people's sentences. So this is what Daniel Bryan did in matches with CM Punk, for instance. So at that match at Over the Limit, it's not really like a WWE match. There's no like finisher fest. There's not as many near falls. It's just this cool wrestling match, and you're watching and you kind of don't go, oh, that's why that's good. It just is good because both of them are really good. Yeah. And it's similar with John Cena, even though John Cena has obviously limitations as a wrestler. But their matches, when they do things like little weird sequences of holds, like, and they hark back to their first match in WWE, go, God, you guys just understand the inner intricacies of wrestling matches better than other people in WWE. So at the same time, we were seeing matches with, you know, like Randy Orton against John Cena at another pay-per-view, and you just go, okay, this is fine, but it's not as good. And I don't know why, because it still looks like the same thing, but it just doesn't work as well.
Yeah, that's one of the weird contradictions in how WWE work, is that you'll hear all their like agents and stuff being like, ah, these guys don't know how to work back when I was wrestling with the Freebirds and that kind of crap, and they say they don't know how to read a crowd and stuff, but you can just see every ounce of a lot of these indie guys that have made their living trying to sell their characters to 100 people a night
who haven't might not be necessarily familiar with their move or their
exactly.
You couldn't tell like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, oh, you guys don't know how to work a crowd and work matches yeah. and respond to crowd. Like, no, they can do it much better than almost anyone else in WWE. Yeah. It's this annoying people like Michael Hayes that say this kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh, these kids don't know how to work. We need to teach them how to work. Go
just do false off. Finishes then, guys, I guess.
Crowds are different too. Anyway, like, that's... Fuck Michael Hayes. But, okay, so... In 20 years' time, like now is 20 years on from Ric Flair doing chops, and everybody woos when somebody does a chop. If somebody very aggressively kicks their opponent in the knee over and over again, will people chant yes in 20 years' time when Daniel Bryan is but a faded memory?
Probably not. You would hope so, and there's a glimmer of hope that would say so, but unfortunately it's periods of lengthy commercial sustainability that often drill into people's minds, especially when they're so consumed with culture and you've got so much of it, you kind of need a big, long, slow burn, like Ric Flair's 20 years or a million years of chopping.
Yeah.
Like, you very rarely do you see someone do something in a ring and someone goes shades of Ultimate Warrior. Like, it's not just because Ultimate Warrior's name's kind of fucking a bit weird. It's that he was only there for, you know, not that long.
That's what... Is he now Warrior? Like, because he had... I know it was a longer, more protracted career and he's a drastically better wrestler than Ultimate Warrior. But Warrior was next and all that kind of stuff and then he fucked it. And people still remember Warrior, but it's very... it's not a lot of shades of grey in people's memory of Warrior, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that.
His legacy?
No, because I think... baked into even his big mainstream success is the knowledge of where this guy came from and how he wrestled and him being of this 2000s indie thing that happened. And even guys that haven't watched a single one of those matches knows this guy's got that kind of credibility and he was our guy. And I think, yeah, no, I think he'll be like, there's no, like, they're very few. When somebody does a chop, somebody goes woo. He's nothing like that, but I think he'll always be kind of in the fans they'll be talking about. I would even say, because people have, they've done a good job of like muddying sort of Bret Hart's legacy, my boy.
Yeah.
But I don't think that'll even happen. I think he'll have a really, I think people have really strong memories of him and very positive memories of him. It's not just because of the WWE run, but because of this guy and his career and his story.
So that even applies to the generation after, like people who
yeah.
don't directly remember him or only remember him when they were kids.
Yeah, he'll be remembered, like, you know, like some like fucking dicks will tell you about, yeah man, what's your favourite Rollerball Rocco match or some shit like that.
Yeah.
He'll be the Rollerball Rocco in that dicks question 20 years from now.
Okay.
Have you seen Brian and McGuinness?
Yeah.
Danielson and McGuinness even.
What do you reckon?
This is an opportunity for us as wrestling fans to take ownership of wrestling history and the legacy of a wrestler as well. So increasingly WWE owns the history of wrestling. So by buying up various things, by taking up, like, yeah. So WCW was a massive thing for quite a while, but it's not anymore because WWE have decided it's not. So if we all decide, all us smarks, that Daniel Bryan's previous as Bryan Danielson and as the American Dragon is important, and as long as we continue to promote that as his legacy, then it's like we don't just trust WWE to make sure that it's mentioned in his Hall of Fame induction.
Okay.
Because it probably won't be. So when we see Daniel Bryan's 2-minute promo for his Hall of Fame induction, whenever that happens in 2, 3, 5 years time, it's going to be like 95% WWE, and we all have to make sure to go, oh, that guy actually had 10 years of being the best in the world before he was the best in the world.
I kind of like that him as like the band god, the Talos of wrestling. But is that not kind of like we're working ourselves
there? Yeah,
we're, I don't know, maybe not. So book the rest of Daniel Bryan's life.
Book the rest of his life.
Daniel Bryan continues to work for WWE in a non-wrestling role, probably manages Brie, is a general manager of something or another, then will fade in and out on a Mick Foley-esque kind of way. He'll randomly come back and everyone will shout. Ideally, if we're going to dream book his life, he leaves and he goes back to the indies and, I don't know, has some sort of hand in training loads of great guys. Doesn't go to NXT, don't go to NXT and train people. Go out and start a wrestling school. That kind of thing.
Here's what I'd like. I'd like Daniel Bryan retires to like a monastery or something up a hill in a kind of a mystical part. Mr. Canada.
Yeah.
Lives in a monastery up a hill in Canada. Once a year, Dave Meltzer makes a pilgrimage up there. They sit down, they have a conversation, and then Meltzer reports Daniel Bryan thinks that Adam Cole is pretty good and would like to see more of him.
Click pro version or free version to see.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, he just kind of he talks about how he still likes Dean Malenko.
Or like if you're a, like an indie wrestler who's conflicted about whether they should go up to NXT or whatever, you have to trek to see Brian in the hills.
He's
like the Quickie Mart guru.
Yeah. I was going right to the Quickie Mart guru as well. Yeah, and or if you want to learn a special hold that's both impressive from a wrestling point of view and from a fighting point of view.
Yeah, there's been a feud and it's like a best of five and it's like three draws and one win each and you're like, oh, I need to find a way to beat this other guy, and you have to go up to Brian to learn the secret holds.
Yeah.
So that's her fantasy booking is life. Okay. We've got various social media outlets and all that kind of stuff. Do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at JumpingNothing. Email us if you have some. Like, you know, we were just saying earlier, the only email we've ever gotten is one where it was very racist. So if you'd like to send us any non-racist emails, jumpingnothing@gmail.com. Again, I stress, don't be a racist. It's very. We talked a long while about how we dealt with that email. How do you deal with somebody that's coming at you with a racist suggestion?
Although,
want to be nice.
To clarify, the guy who had the racist suggestion essentially suggested New Day. And they're going well at the moment, so sorry to you, suggestion guy, for shooting that one down. We got SoundCloud, it's Jumping Nothing, or Jumping hyphen Nothing if you want to actually type in the URL. Subscribe to us on iTunes, a fine place. And
then it's just on your phone when you wake up,
which is good.
It's really good, no effort whatsoever.
Monday morning, you know. That's what I'm going to be doing on Sunday night instead of watching Payback, is editing this, so it'll be right on your phone on Monday morning. Anything else that people should do?
I don't know. I don't think there is anything else. Do we do anything?
Should we do a call to action? Who's the next Daniel Bryan? If you want to dream book the rest of Daniel Bryan's life, if you have answers different to any of the shit that we said, if you think I'm a wanker for bringing up Shane Mussini and T.S. Eliot, email or tweet at us.
Yeah, that's a good. That's some solid social media work right there.
That's a call to action. So if you listen to 60 minutes of this, and you've been invited to give me a load of stick.
Use the hashtag Daniel Bryan Monastery Scenario Feedback. Okay.
Yeah,
that'll do. Okay, see you next time.